Hello, everybody. This is Jonathan Perk from Downstate Neurology Department, and with me is Rola Mahmoud, who is a PGY4 and is actually ready to graduate very soon. So, hi, Rola.
Hi, Dr. Perk.
So, we're going to talk about movement disorder emergencies. So, Rola, what are movement disorder emergencies?
So we all know that movement disorders are slowly progressive disorders, but occasionally, every now and then, we would be called in the emergency room or on the consult service to see patients who have an evolving movement disorder or an acute complication of a movement disorder. This includes patients with Parkinson's and other movement disorders as well. So I wanted to increase awareness among residents and make them more familiar with these situations where they can provide management to these patients as soon as possible.
So maybe let's actually start with Parkinson's. And I know you distinguish between Parkinsonism and also Parkinson disease emergencies. So why don't you describe those emergencies and maybe touch on the appropriate treatments?
Yeah, sure. So acute Parkinsonism, usually patients come in with symptoms of Parkinson's disease like bradykinesia, rigidity, tremors. When these symptoms develop over a short period of days to weeks, you should always consider a secondary cause like medications, which are the most common causes. There are other causes as well, but are less common than medications inducing acute Parkinsonism. When it comes to Parkinson's disease, again, we would see patients coming into the emergency room secondary to falls. Sometimes patients come into the emergency room because of their motor fluctuations, where they can develop new symptoms or worsening symptoms or some features of dysautonomia as well. Patients with Parkinson's also can come in for acute psychosis and may be admitted to psychiatric wards. And this can be also medication-induced. So management at that point would be to stop all medications, try to minimize patients' regimen, and continue with L-DOPA only. But if they need to be treated, there are also antipsychotics that can be given, and with the least extrapyramidal effect, which is clozapine or Seroquel. Clozapine is a little bit difficult to monitor, so usually people like to start with Seroquel first. There are other complications like Parkinsonism hyperparexia syndrome, which is when patients stop their L-DOPA all of a sudden, they can develop like a neuroleptic malignant syndrome-like picture, and it can be dangerous and life-threatening as well.
Yeah, I've actually seen patients like that for whatever reason came into the hospital, were admitted, and sometimes for just another reason, and for some reason either they couldn't eat or take PO, and it was kind of forgotten, the Sinemet pills, and they were just not put in the orders, and then the patient developed fevers.
Right.
And an emergent situation. So talking about neuroleptic malignant syndrome, so what is that? Describe that, and what is the treatment for that?
So neuroleptic malignant syndrome is actually a rare complication of neuroleptics. But it's life-threatening, and it's really important to recognize it. The diagnosis usually is based on the clinical features, which could be altered mental status. Patients develop rigidity. They also have abnormalities in their labs, which include CK levels, which is usually more than 10,000. Numbers are really high. You do not need all the criteria to make a diagnosis, so you need a really high index of suspicion in patients to make a diagnosis. And the treatment is basically supportive. They need an ICU admission. Their vitals need to be monitored because of their dysautonomia. And they also need muscle relaxants. You can might need to be on sedation at times to improve the symptoms.
Right. And also you can use dantrolene.
Yes, dantrolene, of course.
Which I guess we don't really like using, mainly because liver toxicity, and many people don't feel comfortable using it, but it's actually pretty useful in this emergent situation.
Yeah.
So if we mention neuroleptic malignant syndrome, I think it would be appropriate to mention the kind of the sister disease, the serotonin malignant syndrome. So what is that and how does it differ from neuroleptic malignant syndrome? Yeah. What is the treatment for that?
So serotonin syndrome is very similar to neuroleptic malignant syndrome. Many of the clinical features overlap, but they have additional features such as mindfulness, hyperreflexia, and seizures at times. What happens is that patients have increased serotonin levels, which leads to these manifestations. It usually resolves less than 24 hours as compared to neuroleptic, which lasts for a longer period of time. But also it can be life-threatening and patients need to be managed immediately. A treatment, usually there is a serotonin antagonist, cryptoheptadine, which can be given to patients and is very well tolerated and can improve the symptoms in a short period of time. Mm-hmm.
And obviously supportive care as a neuroleptic malignant syndrome is kind of the mainstay with following all the complications of the rhabdomyolysis sometimes associated with renal failure, cardiac problems. Okay, so maybe let's shift gears to other movement disorders. So let's talk about chorea as an emergency. When do we see that?
So chorea usually develops in patients. At young age, we see it mostly in children. It's in Sydenham's chorea, which comes in as a post-streptococcal infection and is one of the core clinical features or diagnostic criteria for rheumatic fever. We also see it in pregnant women who can come in with chorea in their pregnancy. These patients, we should always keep in mind that antiphospholipid antibody syndrome can be an important cause for chorea, and we need to look for it in these patients as well. You can see it in the elderly who develop strokes as hemibilism, hemichorea, and treatment is usually by giving them medications like tetrabenazine or sometimes certain metabolic conditions can do produce chorea like thyroid disease, hypoglycemia, non-ketotic hyperglycemia can also present with chorea. So with treatment of the underlying condition, chorea seems to improve, and if medications are needed, they're usually given short-term until the patients improve and their chorea disappears.
So if we mention chorea, how about let's talk about dystonia, which I think is, well, I don't know actually the percentages, but I feel like it's, at least in my experience, a little bit more common to see patients with dystonic.
You see dystonic reactions in a lot of patients getting antipsychotics, and they can develop, you know, the Okunojiro crisis and these things, and treatment is very easy and straightforward. You just give them antihistaminics like Benadryl, which is available in most of the hospital carts, or anticholinergics as well. There are some patients who have underlying dystonia, like primary dystonia or secondary dystonia, such as PCAN, who can come in with dystonic storm, which is worsening of the dystonic condition. This can happen in the setting of fever, dehydration, or any metabolic derangements. These patients require attention because they can, because of the severity of their dystonia, they can develop rhabdomyolysis and can end up in the ICU because of the severe muscle breakdown. So extreme cases might need general anesthesia and they might need to be intubated for airway protection until the dystonia resolves.
Oh, great. So how about, why don't you summarize the important aspects and the important kind of take-home messages on movement disorder emergencies?
So the take-home messages are basically movement disorders are not only slowly progressive, but there are certain acute complications that we need to pay attention to and identify and manage them as quickly as possible, because some of them can be life-threatening. These include things like neuroleptic malignant syndrome, serotonin syndrome, Parkinsonism, hyperparathyroidism syndrome. When patients with Parkinson's are admitted in the hospital, make sure they stay on their medications. If they can't take their medications orally, then there are other forms of L-DOPA, such as the subcutaneous forms, that can be given to these patients as well until they improve. Certain things such as chorea treatment is simple, reverse the medical condition if there's anything underlying causing the chorea, or start medical treatment with tetrabenazine, which is usually effective. Same goes for dystonia as well. Treatment is simple. If a patient develops a dystonic reaction, make sure you give him Benadryl or anticholinergics. And dystonic storm is life-threatening as well, so it should be managed very carefully in an ICU setting.
Oh, great. So, learned a lot. Again, Rola Mahmood, PGY4 in our SUNY Downstate Neurology Program. And this is Jonathan Perk. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Perk.